Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Blog Talk Radio.
Well, greetings, everyone. It's Tuesday night, and that familiar sound means it's time for the Cujo's Corner. My name is James E. King III, and I am the producer. And let me introduce our host, world-renowned boxing writer, ring announcer, and host of the show, Mr. Joseph Heron. Joseph, how are you doing this evening?
Well, you know, I am doing tremendously considering that we have a packed show for everybody. Incredible guys. Some of my favorite guests are going to be on the show, as well as some new faces to the Pugilist Corner. Guys, kicking off tonight's show, we're going to be speaking with expert trainer and man of the hour, Mr. Joel Diaz. We're also going to be speaking with the always entertaining, always insightful Iceman John Scully. And guys, welcome into the show for the first time. We're going to be featuring WBO junior middleweight title challenger, Mr. Demetrius Andrade, who's going to be fighting in Corpus Christi, Texas on November 9th. Then we're going to be speaking with heavyweight American hopeful, Mr. Brian Jennings. We're going to be discussing his switch from main events to Gary Shaw Promotions. That's going to be interesting indeed. And then we're going to be speaking with two of the brightest prospects in all of boxing from California. Super bantamweight, Mr. Roman Morales. And we're also going to be speaking with lightweight contender prospect, Mr. Alejandro Luna, both from Gary Shaw Promotions as well. So, guys, this is going to be a very packed show for everyone. JK, do we have our first guest in the queue, sir? Well, I guess he's currently trying to get him. But, guys, yeah, this is a big, big this is a very interesting time for Mr. Joel Diaz. Now, for a while, he's been to the know of boxing. He's been one of the most well-respected trainers in all of boxing. And it's about time that he starts getting recognized as such. This gentleman is boxing through and through. He comes from a boxing family. He still trains his brother, Julio, who has been in the ring twice, or I think maybe even three times this year. And obviously his most memorable bout this year, Julio, was when he gave that valiant effort in England, in which a lot of people thought that he pulled off the upset against Amir Khan. Well, Joel is doing a tremendous job with every single one of his fighters. He's taken on Mr. Diego Magdaleno as well as his brother Jesse Magdaleno. And you've already seen instantaneous improvement to their fight game.
Mr. Heron.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. We had to make Mr. Diaz needed a few minutes, so we're starting off the show with Mr. Iceman Scully. Proper introductions, please.
Guys, it is always a privilege to feature this gentleman, and he is former light heavyweight contender, now expert trainer, the always insightful Mr. Iceman, John Scully Iceman. How are you doing tonight, brother?
Gentlemen, I'm very excited. I'm happy to be here with you guys always, but I just got out of the gym. I sparred six rounds with a guy. I'm feeling good, man. I'm back where I belong. I feel good.
Wow, you actually did some sparring, brother.
Well, no, I did. I did four four rounds last night with another guy at a different gym, and then this guy here has got a fight next Saturday, so I came to give him some work today, and I just left the gym like 5 minutes ago, and I feel good, man. Feels good being in the gym sparring. It really does.
Wow. So does anyone jive you about being the wily old veteran, man? Do you get any B-hop crack there, brother?
Yeah. You know what? I admire. It's funny. I was just telling the guy because I'm not world class right now, but I'm sharp and I feel good. I'm really sharp. And one of the guys actually tonight, he was like, "Man, it's crazy." He goes, "How old are you?" 46. And I'm like 15 years older than the guy I'm sparring. And he goes, "Man, it's so crazy." I go, "You know what?" I go, "Age is not a factor anymore. It's your lifestyle." And I said, "Look at Bernard Hopkins, the guy. He lives it. He doesn't eat junk food. He's focused. He's always on weight. You know, he's a super athlete." And, I respect Hopkins, and I kind of pattern myself after him. And, you know, I don't eat junk food. I don't ever drink alcohol, things like that. And, 40's the new 30, apparently.
Well, yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, you look at JMM, and he just competed in, a huge payday, $6 million payday for Juan Manuel Marquez. And I'm glad you brought up age because that's a huge misconception in all of boxing. And, and it's amazing that if you don't take a huge amount of punishment in the ring, and, but where does the wear and tear come from? Does the majority of wear and tear that comes on a fighter's body, does it come from being in the ring, the damage that you take during the prize fight, or is it all of the ring wars that you have in sparring with the training in consecutive camp after camp after camp? What do you think adds more to the wear and tear of a prize fighter, Scully?
Well, the fight obviously has an effect, but yeah, the constant. See, because for most guys, when they spar, especially in the beginning of camp, they're not in that good of shape. And even when they get in good shape, they're tired from the running that morning. A guy will spar 8 rounds or 10 rounds or 12 rounds in camp, but he ran 5 miles that morning. And, so he's always impaired. And he takes more punches in the gym. Whereas on fight night, you get a chance to rest. In the gym, when you spar, you've been training right up until the day you're sparring, as opposed to the fight where ideally you get to rest for a couple of days and recover your body. So, the gym definitely has an effect. And, again, that's why a guy like Hopkins, he's not, he's not affected by that because he comes to camp practically on weight in shape. Most guys don't do that. And I think Hopkins is a tremendous role model and an example for our guys.
That is very well put. And let it be a lesson to all of you young fighters who listen to the show.
Let me tell you something. I was telling the guy tonight, I said, "Listen," I said, "I boxed 6 rounds tonight easy. Like, I could have done 10 to 12, no problem." And I directly, whether it's mental, but I believe it's factual, I can do that because, as I've stated many times, I've never drank alcohol in my life. I've never done drugs, never abused my body. I don't eat the terrible junk food and the fried foods and all that stuff. I don't eat red meat anymore. And I believe that that's the reason why.
Well, I tell you what, man, you make a solid case for it because too often, we see these guys who are in between fights, and because of maybe it's their age, maybe it's the people that they surround themselves with, but, yeah, they love to party. Ronnie used to really complain about it, Ronnie Shields, my co-host on Sunday nights, and he would complain about it saying, "You know what, I don't know what to do because we're here trying to get this guy into shape, and we can't focus on strategy because he can't really execute the things that I want him to."
Right.
And so the entire camp, we're trying to get this guy into fight shape rather than focusing on the game plan.
Exactly.
They realize that, man.
Right. Most training camps, that's how they are, believe it or not. Like, you would think that, like when I was a kid, I thought training camps were just, working on the technique, working on the game plan, doing all this masterful stuff. And as I started training fighters, I realized at least the first half of the camp. We're just trying to get the weight off of this guy, you know. And it's just, you know, like I say, it must be easy, but it must be a pleasure to train Hopkins, because you don't have to worry about where he is. You don't have to worry about his weight. You don't have to worry about – you could sleep late and just say, listen, Bernard, you know you got to run 5 miles in the morning. And I don't think Bernard is – I know he's not the type of guy to skip it. And believe me, you'd be surprised at the amount of world-class fighters who, if you didn't go in the room and actually get them out of bed, they wouldn't get out of the bed. It's mind-boggling.
That's crazy. You know what? And that's a great segue into our next topic, because here's a guy, Mike Alvarado, fighting in his hometown, right, for this big, big event coming up on Saturday night on HBO. He's facing, boy, a devastating puncher by the name of Ruslan Provodnikov. This guy, for most people in the boxing know, have been aware that, yeah, this guy has been a lethal puncher. But he's, because of his promotional, being attached with Artie Palullo and Banner Promotions, he really hasn't been able to get that big break until this year. All of a sudden, this guy comes on the big stage, and Mike Alvarado's coming off of his, you know, most spectacular victory to date against Bam Bam Rios. He's fighting now in his hometown. What's the potential dangers of fighting in your hometown and training in your hometown? Obviously, training in Denver is optimum if you want to get, you know, be in shape for that high altitude. But how big of an distraction is it, Scully, to train in your hometown when the fight is taking place in your hometown?
It all depends on the individual. And here's my belief, and I can't get fighters to do this. I say, listen, you know, the fighters like to sound good. Like, yeah, we're going away to training camp. We're going to Big Bear. We're going here. We're doing this. I say, listen, if you are real, you can go to camp in your house, because the distractions are there if you allow them. You know, I know a guy. I remember Jose Rivera. I trained Jose when he won the WBA title at 154. Jose was the type of guy. He would tell his friends before, you know, when he started training for fighting, he said, listen, don't call me because I'm not picking up. Don't knock on the door because I'm not answering. For the next 6-8 weeks, forget I'm alive. And that's it. They respected that. And, you know, if you don't pick up the phone, you know, I had a fighter one time, world-class fighter. I won't say his name, but I'll tell you this much. He would, if his phone would ring during training, he would stop and go over and pick it up to see what who it was. I mean, it's insane. It was unbelievable to me. I'm like, are you crazy? I said, I'm going to take a hammer and I'm going to smash it. Like, this is insane. It's insane that you would pick that phone up. I cannot believe you would pick that phone up. But so it's all, I'm sure Bernard Hopkins doesn't pick up the phone. I know for a fact he doesn't. So a guy could have training camp in his house, and if he's real, he won't have to worry, you know. But, you know, again, you have to train camp. There's some seclusion, because on the flip side, you might be real, but your wife isn't necessarily as real as you. A lot, you know, I hope the women don't get mad at me, but this is just the way it is. Every fighter will tell you, a woman doesn't understand truly what it is. Like, you could tell a woman, listen, and I might have told you this story, but I'm going to tell you again, just so this encompasses the whole thing, okay? We got time for a quick story?
Absolutely, man. The floor is yours,
okay.
My friend.
Check this out. This is a true story, 100% true. I'm not going to say the guy's name. He might be embarrassed, but a world-class fighter. If I say his name, everybody in your audience will know who it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm at the site of his fight. We're in the hotel the day, I guess it was the day of the fight. He calls my phone. He said, listen, could you come to my hotel room, please? And I could tell by the tone in his voice that something wasn't right. I said, I'll be right there. I get to the room, I knock on the door. He opens the door, his wife is there. His wife is crying. So I said, oh man, what happened now? He comes out, he goes, listen, I'm gonna go take a walk. Can you tell her what I'm going through right now? I go, okay. So he walks away. She comes, I walk in the room and I go, hey, what's the matter? What's going on? This is exactly, I remember word for word, it's exactly what she said. Through tears, she said. He said that after the fight's over, he's going to come back here and he's going to kill me. And I laughed. I laughed at her, and she said, "Why are you laughing?" I go, you know how it is, the fight." She goes, "No, I've never been with him on the day of the fight." I said, "Oh," I said, "Okay, listen." I said, "You don't understand. Your husband needs space. You don't understand that when you ask him how he's feeling, you think that's a normal question. It's not. He hates you. He doesn't want you to say anything. Don't ask him." I said, "Look, don't ask him how he's feeling. Don't ask him if he wants some soda. Don't ask him if he wants you to rub his feet. Go to the mall, go to the store, go buy some stuff. Come back later after the fight. Your husband will be back to normal." And that was it. She didn't understand that the man, a fighter training for a fight, trying to focus, is you know, for lack of a better term, he's a little bit crazy. He's not in the mood to hear people's everyday nonsense that they would normally argue about, you know. And so that's one reason why a fighter, if he doesn't have a good team around him, I think honestly, fighters go away more to get away from their families than anything. You know, because their wife doesn't necessarily understand. Their kids don't understand. They want to play with daddy. They want to wrestle with him. And, you know, they don't understand when he tells them to, you know, leave me alone for a couple minutes. So that's one reason to go away. But, you know, if you're a young guy, you're single, you're free, there's no reason you can't train at home. That, you know, your focus has to be such that you could do that.
And there's no way you can tell us who that fighter was, huh? I'm just kidding,
nah,
John.
Can't do it.
But, you know,
true
yeah,
story.
This is, well, of course, man. We all love your true stories, man. They're awesome. That's why we love featuring you on the show, brother. You're full of them. And, yeah, you know, and it's true. It's absolutely true. And what you were talking about with the young fighters, I went and I observed a kid. And again, I'm not going to mention any names either because this is somewhat embarrassing. But every young fighter that I saw in that gym, in the middle of sparring, okay, as soon as that round was over, they went and checked their iPhone.
Right.
For messages. And they would post something on Facebook. I'm like, dude, are you serious?
Let me tell you what.
I've experienced something like that, John.
I'll tell you another one. Las Vegas, 2002, the top-ranked gym. I'm in the gym. A star, a very, 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 very recognizable name is on the speed bag. I'm watching the speed bag work. In the middle of the round, the cell phone rings. It's on this fighter's, like, waistband. The fighter picks it up with one hand and is talking on it, hitting the speed bag with the other hand. Now, come on. Like, you're talking ridiculous. You're talking, and people might say, oh, it's the big deal. It's an indication that you're not 110% focused, and you need to be 110% focused. That's just the way it is.
You know, that's a very good point, and it's funny. I think it's a generation gap, John, if you ask me, brother. Because I talk to young guys all the time in the gym, and they continually say, well, what's the big deal? I'm still taking care of business. I'm still training. No, it's a distraction. Whether you realize it or not, it's a distraction.
It's an air hole. What I call an air hole.
Sitting on my fat rear end and writing an article, man, I shut everything off.
Right,
else is
it's
a distraction.
It's an air hole. You're a giant balloon. You can have no air hole whatsoever. If you have an air hole, you're losing air. Your balloon is not going to be as firm as it should be. It's not going to be as full and big as it should be. Any little thing is an indication that your focus is not 100%. And most people need to be 100% just to make up for their deficiency. In maybe they don't have as much power, they don't have as much speed, they don't have as much agility. They need to make up for it with superior focus and conditioning. And really, and I'll be honest with you, I've trained a lot of fighters. I've been around hundreds of fighters. I could count on one, maybe two hands, the number of fighters who I could say had superior focus. You know, it's surprising how many are not what I call airtight. You'd be amazed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing, John, and it's, you look at Tim Bradley last week or this past weekend. This is a guy who is a perfect example of 100% focus and dedication to his craft. Because when you look at him, he looks like an good friend of mine, editor of Fight Saga, from his name is Lee Cleveland. He actually wrote a brilliant article describing Timothy Bradley as a jack of all trades but a master of none. But because of his dedication, his work ethic, his focus, he gets 100% of everything that he has, and it shows in the ring.
Right.
You know, what are your final thoughts on this before we start talking about the fight coming up this Saturday night?
I've never been, you know, like a huge Timothy Bradley fan. I was respected him and everything, but he really showed me something, what I call special. He showed me something almost like Danny Garcia did against Matisse. He showed me stuff that I had never really seen from him before in his last fight. And, he improved. He's improving. And I was very, very impressed with Timothy Bradley the other night in every facet, in every way. I was very impressed with him.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're a real boxing fan, you couldn't help but be impressed with the game plan, the discipline in executing that game plan. Absolutely brilliant. Didn't give JMM very many windows to actually counter him effectively, and really didn't make his life very easy for 12 rounds. But very quickly, we have about a minute left, John. What is your prediction for this big fight coming up this Saturday night? How do you see it playing out, my friend?
Well, I hate to burst the bubble here of anticipation, but to be honest with you, I can honestly say I haven't seen enough of both guys to really make a fair prediction. It would be just strictly guessing on my part. You know, I wouldn't feel comfortable even guessing because I haven't seen enough of either guy to really say.
Well, I tell you what, as soon as this fight actually plays out this Saturday night from Denver, Colorado on HBO, we'll have to get back so you can actually speak on it.
Right. Oh, yeah, no, I would love to. I look forward to it.
Very good. Iceman, you're always, man, a pleasure to speak with, and we know that our listeners, they always value your stories, your anecdotes, and your opinion. So we can't wait to have you back, brother. Thank you so much for being on this episode of the Pugilist Corner, my friend.
Thank you. Always an honor. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. God bless you, man.
You too.
Well,
buddy.
Guys, that was the incomparable Mr. Iceman, John Scully, always full of insight. But right now, guys, we are going to speak with the man of the hour, expert trainer, former lightweight contender. And, guys, he is starting to get his just due as being one of the best trainers in boxing. Introducing at this time the incomparable Mr. Joel Diaz. Joel, how are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm just here, you know, just enjoying my day.
Well, I hope you are, brother. You've got a lot to feel good about. My goodness, man, you've been on a great run lately. First of all, that's two events in a row in which your fighters have come up big and they've looked spectacular doing it. Obviously, we had Diego Magdaleno on the undercard of the Chavez Jr. event in Carson. And then this past Saturday night, my goodness, your guy looks spectacular, Mr. Timothy Bradley. What are your thoughts on his performance this past Saturday night against fight legend JMM?
Well, you know, it's just our dedication, our work, you know, just paid off. We put the work in and, you know, we just go and perform. We just go do our job. You know, that day, you know, Saturday night, it was just a day that we worked for, you know. We put in our time, we put in our work, and at the end of the day, it is what it is.
Well, I tell you what, he looked fantastic. I thought he used the jab superbly, dictating the pace of the fight, using lateral movement, using his speed, agility to move in and out of harm's way, using the entire ring at times. How difficult was it during the fight for Tim to actually stick to the script?
You know, it wasn't that difficult, you know, because besides the physical part in the gym, We prepared to follow the plan. And the game plan was, listen, this is your corner, and, you know, frustrate Marquez, you know, frustrate them. And then, you know, just keep jabbing them. Move, use your feet, use your angles, you know, and then, you know, you're sticking to deep waters.
Boy, you know, and what's amazing is before this fight, you were on the show and you were talking about, you know, it's ridiculous the amount of disrespect that this kid gets from the media, from the fans, and I don't understand it. I think he's going to have to knock out JMM in order to get that universal respect that he so justly deserves. What are your thoughts now? Do you feel that after this performance, you're going to start to see that long overdue respect to Mr. Timothy Bradley?
You know, I really don't understand what the problem is. You know, there's been a few fights that if we just come to fight, we prepare ourselves to give the people what they want to see. And, you know, coming out of the fight, a lot of people don't give Timothy the respect he deserves. But, you know, we keep winning. You know, it's hard to put it together. I mean, I see that the fans want to see something different. And Timothy just keeps winning. I don't know what to say, but, you know, Timothy is here to stay. He is a world champion. He has beat some of the best fighters in the business. And, you know, I wish people can understand that this is a business. This is a job. And this is a job for us. Timothy keeps winning. Give him some respect, man. He deserves it.
Absolutely. Both you and Tim are two great ambassadors for the sport. And as far as work ethic, dedication, yeah, everything that you guys do exudes all of that. You know, talk about that, Joel. How nice is it to actually have a fighter who seemingly is just dedicated 24/7, works his butt off in the gym, and it obviously shows in the ring? How comforting is that, knowing that your guy is not going to show up to camp 30 pounds or 40 pounds overweight? How much easier does it make your job in the gym?
You know, it makes my job easy, just knowing that he's a disciplined fighter. He comes to the gym ready to work, and he makes my job easy. You know, as a matter of fact, when he first camped, My main concern is holding him back because he works extremely hard. And I got to tell him, you know what? Hey, you're doing too much. You got to relax. So once the job is done, my job is to hold him back because he always wants to do the extra work to make sure that there's nothing, that we don't leave any time. He's a very hard worker, man. And he wants to work. He loves to win. He works extremely hard, and that's just the way it is.
Well, I tell you what, it shows in the ring, Joel. I mean, you guys did a great job in preparing for the best version of Juan Manuel Marquez, and you made it look seemingly easy. You know, just sticking to the game plan, not giving him a large window in which to counter. Was that the key? Just using sporadic movement, using sporadic jabs, just one or two punches at a time, and not really giving him that window of opportunity. Was that the key in defeating him this past Saturday night?
You know, a lot of people get influenced by the commentators, and they will never forget about that one punch knockout that he put on Manny Pacquiao.
Mm-hmm.
Marquez is 40 years old. He has 60 fights. After the 60 fight, behind every fight, there's a training camp.
Mm-hmm.
Every camp is wear and tear your body. Marquez is an older fighter. You know, a lot of people don't do their work, don't do their homework, especially the fans. I did my work. I did my homework. I said, you know what? Marquez was losing to Pacquiao. You know,
mm-hmm.
In the last fight, he was losing the fight. He was
mm-hmm.
about to get stopped. He played through that punch. I mean, when you got a partner, when you got yourself a partner, and a dance partner especially, you dazzle them once, you dazzle them twice. The third time, I mean, of course you're going to know your dance partner. And that's what happened. He knew my, he knew my infection really well. That punch was tight. It was, I mean, it was a common punch after three fights. Coming into the fight, it wasn't going to be a Manny Pacquiao. A lot of people thought, you know what? He's going to get knocked out. It's not going to happen. 40 years old, 50 fights. You know, previous fights, he wasn't, Marquez was not in his prime anymore. Slow fighter, older fighter. Timothy, all he had to do was just stay outside, use strategy, use footwork, keep your jab on him, frustrate him, you can beat him.
You know, yeah, absolutely. So from your angle in the ring, you noticeably saw the age showing up on JMM, and you've seen this, like you said, you studied fight tape, you saw his skills, his reflexes, his hand speed, his ability to pull the trigger. You saw that somewhat eroding over his last several fights?
Of course. You know, I mean, Marquez, I mean, at age 40, of course he slowed down. I mean, he is hard. He has a powerful punch. But if you take him into deep waters after the fifth, sixth round, you frustrate him, he don't know what to do.
Wow. That is great stuff, Joel. You know, let's talk about JMM. And after the fight, you know, is this merely a business move on the part of JMM, always leaving that door open, that shadow of doubt to all of his fans that, hey, I really won the fight, I was robbed. You know, but doesn't that get a little tiresome after a while? You know, what are your thoughts on JMM's post-fight comments in sounding like sour grapes? What are your thoughts on that, Joel?
You know, after the fight, I knew we won the fight. I mean, I knew Timothy did what he needed to take to win the fight. At the press conference after the fight, Marquez, Nacho Bernstein, you know, they thought they were robbed. Those are two people that I really respect and I admire in the business. Just listening to their comments after the fight, I mean, I lost a little respect because, you know what? Boxing is boxing. You got to take it like a man. If you lose, you lose. If you win, you win. You know, that's why after the Manny Pacquiao and Bradley fight, you know, it really bothered me. The fact that, you know, we went to work. We put in our work. The judges gave us a decision. I mean, we were not the judges that night. The fact that Timothy came out of that fight on his feet, walking out of that feet, to me, it was a win. And now, Marquez and Nacho want to influence the people by saying that they got robbed. It really bothered me because we put the plan together, the strategy to fight, and there was no doubt in my mind that we won. Now they want to influence the people by saying we got robbed. It really bothered me because we went to work, we put the strategy together, people wanted to see a knockout. It wasn't going to happen. Timothy Bradley came in with a smart plan to outbox Juan Manuel Omar. And that's what happened, that man.
Yeah. I mean, it was pretty obvious to most who weren't actually, again, on the heels of Juan Manuel Marquez, to most knowledgeable boxing scribes and boxing viewers. Yeah, it was pretty clear that Timothy Bradley had outboxed Juan Manuel Marquez. It was pretty clear. So I'm going to ask you, Joel, what would you like to see happen in Timothy Bradley's career in his next bout? You know, obviously, I don't think Top Rank really has any plans or HBO has any plans for Timothy Bradley until 2014. And I know you're not entirely responsible for making this decision. That's Cameron Duncan and Bob Arum. But who would you like to see pitted against Timothy Bradley in 2014, my friend?
You know, I can be here all night and pick fighters. and just be happy. That's not the thing with me. You know, I mean, it's just hard to know that top rank and both of boys don't work together. So I cannot make any decisions. But you know what? I'm going to tell you something. I mean, there is a wound that was not healed in my life until we set things clear with Manny Pacquiao. You know, there's one thing in my mind, and I would love to go back to Manny Pacquiao fight a rematch for the simple reason that we want to make things clear. You know, if he's going to knock out Tim Bradley, I'll go home happy with a defeat. And if we beat him decisively, I would go home happy. I hate controversy. I hate them. They leave a very bad spark in my life. Honestly, I was hit really hard with controversy. People giving me negative thoughts, negative opinions. And you know what? Honestly, I would love to go back to Manny Pacquiao and fight him again and make it clear. If Manny Pacquiao can knock out Tim Bradley, beautiful, nice. I will be happy. Why? Because he beat Timothy Bradley, and mostly, you know, I go home with a defeat, and there's no controversy. And if Timothy beats Manny Pacquiao decisively, I go home with a happy decision and beating Manny Pacquiao. Other than that, I don't care. I mean, there's a lot of talks about Timothy fighting Mayweather, fighting this, fighting that. I don't really care. The only thing I would like to see is Timothy Bradley go back to fight Manny Pacquiao and make things clear.
That's very well said. And obviously, yeah, it's something that greatly affected you, both you and Timothy, going into the Provodnikov and as well going into this fight. Was that part of the motivation for looking so spectacular against JMM? Was that a huge motivating factor that, hey, we're going to spank the guy who just knocked out Manny Pacquiao to prove our dominance in the sport? Was that a huge motivator for you guys in this training camp?
Of course, you know, Juan Manuel Marquez left a big mark in the world by knocking out Pacquiao. You know, Timothy wanted that legacy of beating the person that knocked out Manny Pacquiao. But at the same time, I know Timothy is not comfortable. I know Timothy is not happy just living with that doubt in his mind that people think, you know, you didn't beat Manny Pacquiao. They gave you a gift. And I hate that. I really hate that. If I was, you know, so, you know, I really don't look at anybody else as an opponent. I would love to go back to Manny Pacquiao. And if we're going to lose to him, we're going home happy. Let's lose or let's win, period. I don't want a controversy.
Well, you guys made an excellent case for a rematch. And quite honestly, you know, just, you know, the boxing world seems to be buzzing for some strange reason about a possible match between Timothy Bradley and the winner of Alvarado Provodnikov. But just by from what I've heard at the post-fight press conference and from your words right now, is it going to be difficult to get motivated for something like that if Bob Arum actually approaches you with that fight?
Right. You know, I know that it's a difficult situation because both of them are top rank. You know, they have the reach. There's a lot of fighters in that division that people would love to see. But unfortunately, the issues between promoters are not going to let it happen. But, you know, it is what it is. And in our circle of opponents, it's only Pacquiao, Randy Rios, Alvarado, and Jesse Vargas. Other than that, we can't decide. We can't make any demand because that's the only circle. I mean, if the promoters will work together and we have free of expression, I mean, man, there's a lot of fighters out there. There is Danny Garcia. There is my daughter.
Amir Khan, a fight that everyone's been wanting to see for a very long time.
Of course. And it sucks because, I mean, in the boxing world, there's a lot of fights we want to see, and they can happen. I mean, we want to see Amir Mahdev fight Donito Donaire, Rigo Diao, you know, Santa Cruz, you know, fight some of them all, but they can because promoters have issues. And that messes, I mean, that messes everything up for the boxing fan.
Yeah, it's not just the promoters anymore, though. It's the networks as well. I mean, right now, HBO, they love Timothy Bradley. They love featuring Timothy Bradley. You know, he's a big star, you know, to Peter Nelson, to Ken Hirschman. They absolutely love you guys. You know, so if you know, and what's going around is a rumor that, yeah, Bradley has one fight left on his contract with Top Rank, and I don't really want to talk about the business end with you, Joel, because I know you don't like to get involved with that stuff. But, you know, if the opportunity presents itself, could you actually see Timothy Bradley severing, you know, his relationship with HBO to go fight Mayweather on Showtime, or the winner of Adrian Broner, Marcos Maidana on Showtime, Amir Khan on Showtime, Danny Garcia on Showtime? Yeah, it sounds like. Yeah, and I think a lot of the fight fans would love to see those fights. You know, so is that a possibility in your mind, Joel?
Of course, definitely. You know, those are the things that a lot of fans want to see. And me as a trainer, I would love to see fights like that. Like, I mean, Adrian Broner, Lucas Matisse, Maidana. But you know what? It's a business, and I'm a trainer. I really stick to my job as a trainer.
Mm-hmm.
I let the manager do their job, and I let the promoters do their job. But sometimes it bothers me the fact that we can't work together. I mean, me as a trainer and as a fan, I would like to see the best possible fights for my fighters. Give the people what they want to see, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Very well said. And, you know, what's funny is a lot of young fighters, they allow their managers, if they have a close tie with a promoter, they will allow their manager and promoter to make these business decisions regarding their career. But it seems that Timothy Bradley has become, over the past year, a much bigger commodity in which he can actually dictate the terms to Cameron Duncan and say, you know, I want to do this, and you'd better represent me. and I don't care about your relationship with Top Rank and Bob Arum. I want to see this done. You know, I think too often fighters they forget that they have the ultimate power in this sport. If they don't want to step in the ring with a certain opponent, there's very little that any promoter or manager can do about it. You know, what are your thoughts on this before we actually switch gears and start talking about matchups and future fights?
Well, you know what? It's sad to see that there's a lot of fights that can happen, and they play due to the issues that promoters got going on. But you know what? Cameron Duncan, as a manager, has done his job with Timothy.
Mm-hmm.
I have nothing but respect for everybody in the business. But me as a trainer, I would like to see my fighter fight the best there is in the sport for the reason that I want to see my fighter be the best. I want my fighter to be considered one of the best fighters in the world. And, I mean, nothing else. But I know that, you know, there's issues between promoters, between managers. I really don't get into it. I just stick to my thing, and that's train fighters. Just work hard, put my time in, and champion.
Well, you're doing a great job, Joel, at that. So, Will, in the final 5-6 minutes of your segment, we're going to shift gears, and we're going to talk about potential matchups for Tim. And if you could just, again, no politics. I don't want to talk about the business end of it. Is this fight possible? I don't even want to mention that. This is for all of our fans and all of the diehard boxing fans listening. I want to start talking about how Tim matches up with certain fighters and what your thoughts are on that. Tim Bradley versus Floyd Mayweather. A lot of boxing scribes seem to think that Bradley has the style to really give Floyd Mayweather fits in the ring. Do you see the same thing as well, my friend?
Oh, definitely. You know, Timothy's style can complicate anybody's night. And Timothy and Mayweather will be a fight. It will be a fight that will take more than just physical. It will be a mental fight because styles may fight. Mayweather is a very smart fighter. Timothy Bradley can adjust to any fighter, and it will be a chess game. But I think that Timothy Bradley can give a very difficult night to one of the best fighters in the business, and that will be Mayweather. Timothy has everything it takes to complicate anybody's night. And Mayweather will not be an exception.
Wow. You know, because when you think about Floyd Mayweather, I mean, and a lot of fighters seem to have, like De La Hoya put it, you know, in the lead-up to the Canelo Alvarez-Floyd Mayweather fight, he thought for sure, hey, I have the blueprints on how to beat Floyd Mayweather, but when you get into the ring with him, his speed, his reflexes, his ability to adapt, it seems to really give every single fighter problems, in which it seems pretty obvious. Well, you've got to make it a numbers game. You've got to let your hands go. You've got to punch in volume. Even if you're not hitting him flush right on the chin, you have to create that for the judges at ringside, that you're outworking him, you're dictating the pace of the fight. But then when it comes to the time of the fight, it just doesn't happen that way. So seemingly, Bradley, he's got the speed, he's got the reflexes, he's got the athleticism. You know, why do you think that actually usually takes place in the ring whenever Floyd fights somebody? Is it his reflexes? Is it his hand speed? What do you think it is, Joel?
You know what, Mayweather is the best there is in boxing. Why? Because he's smart. He has hand speed. His reflexes are very accurate. You know, a lot of people think, oh, Canelo didn't do nothing against Mayweather. It's not that. It's just that Mayweather didn't let Canelo do anything. I mean, it's just styles. Mayweather is a very smart fighter. He reads you before you do anything. I mean, there's no such thing as I can't. Mayweather does not let you do what you want to do. He doesn't let you establish. He doesn't let you stay. I mean, the more you miss, the more you're going to get frustrated, the more the tighter you're going to get in that ring. And that's Mayweather. Mayweather is a very smart fighter, the best there is. But you know what? Timothy has similarities. Timothy can adapt to a fighter like Mayweather. Like he told me one day, Coach, I have followed Mayweather's career, and I see what he does. His speed, his hands. I see that he's a very smart fighter. I mean, I followed Marquez's career for years. That's the reason why I set the plan together, because I know Marquez. I follow him. I've been a big fan of Marquez. And Mayweather is a fighter that Timothy Brady has followed for years, and Timothy will adapt to a Mayweather style. And I think it will be a great fight. You know, it will be a fight of styles, youth, and most of all, fans.
Wow. Well, we hope that happens for you guys, honestly. We hope that it happens for all of the fight fans, you know, in boxing, because that, to me, I mean, a lot of people are talking about Amir Khan possibly, but honestly, Floyd Mayweather fighting a guy who just defeated Juan Manuel Marquez and has a victory over Manny Pacquiao, I don't see it getting much better than that, brother. Your final thoughts before we actually let you go, my friend.
You know, Mayweather, I mean, he is at the top. He is the best fighter there is in boxing, because boxing is a sport. Boxing is a sweet science. And I know that a lot the Latino community, the Mexicans, the Latinos, they want to see a fight. But when it comes to boxing, Mayweather is boxing. I mean, Amir Khan, to me, I think he's overrated. I mean, he fought Julio Diaz at 33 years old at the end of his career. And I think Julio Diaz gave him a run for his money. I mean, he just wants to make a name for himself. He has no chance against the Mayweather, honestly. but at the same time, dude, right now, it's a new era. It's a new era of boxing. Mayweather, Andre Ward, Timothy Bradley. You know, of course, I mean, if you look at the Mexican fighters, the Latino fighters, of course, you got Juan Manuel Marquez. Why? Because they're going to give you a fight.
Mm-hmm.
A fight is something that a lot of people want to see, especially the Latino community. They want to see blood, knockdowns, knockouts. You know, but if you want to see the real sweet science of boxing, watch Mayweather and watch Timothy Bradley and watch Andre Ward. That's boxing.
Absolutely. His name is Joel Diaz, one of the premier trainers of the sport. Joel, thank you so much for gracing the airwaves once again, my friend. It's always enlightening, and you're always entertaining, brother, and we love speaking with you. So we want to have you back very, very soon, my friend. But I'm sure you have some vacationing to do, my friend. Or is it back in the gym? Which one is it, brother?
No, I'm back in the gym. There's no time for me. I mean, I got Diego de la Hoya coming back. He has a scheduled fight. And Jesse Magdaleno just fought Friday, the day before Timothy Bradley. He put up a great performance, a great knockout in the third round. I mean, I got work. I mean, when there's work, you have to stick to it. You know, there's vacation, I understand. But right now, there's no time for vacation. The only thing I want to do is keep generating champions and, you know, bring these guys up in the bottom.
Well, I tell you what, we love your dedication to the sport, and you're doing a great job at your gym and with all of your ever-growing stable of fighters. Joel, you're a credit to the sport, my friend. Thank you so much for being on the show, and we look forward to speaking with you again, talking about the other great fighters in your big, big stable of boxing. So thank you so much, brother, for being on the show.
Thank you, sir. And anytime. It's a pleasure being on your show. You know, what can I say? I love talking to you guys. I love it when you guys, you know, really give me that credit, because at the end of the day, it's all work. I put in my work, and all I want to do is please the fans and give the people what they want to see.
Well, you're doing a great job, Joel. Keep it up, brother. We love featuring you on the show. So thank you so much for being on this episode, man, and we will speak to you sometime very soon. God bless you, brother, and your family and your whole stable of fighters, brother.
I appreciate it. Thank you, man. Have a great night.
You too, my friend. Guys, that was the incomparable Mr. Joel Diaz. And, you know, he is probably one of the hardest working trainers in all of boxing. And you just heard it. Boy, there's no time for vacation. It's all about that dedication in the gym. And that's why we love featuring Joel. Credit to the sport, one of the best ambassadors in boxing. But guys, coming up, we're going to be speaking with a gentleman who seems to be destined for greatness and is going to be fighting for his very first world title on November 9th. He's going to be competing for the WBO Junior Middleweight Championship of the World, and I'm referring to former Olympian Mr. Demetrius Andrade. JK, is Mr. Andrade currently in the queue, sir? Well, I guess he's currently getting him. But, guys, yes, big, big fight coming up in Corpus Christi, Texas. It's going to be on November 9th. It's part of a huge triple header on HBO. I can't wait to see it. It's going to be a very intriguing matchup. And we've got two former Olympian. Both guys are very crafty technicians in the ring. It's going to be very interesting to see who actually walks away with the title after this one. It's going to be a tremendous event. Demetrius Andrade versus Vanyas Mardarosyan. And this is a very perplexing bout, because both gentlemen seem to be stuck in a division in which Golden Boy Promotions primarily has a monopoly on the division. Obviously, this is the only title besides maybe Carlos Molina, the IBF title holder, who's going to be facing Mr. Victor Ortiz later on this year. It seems that all the other titles are currently monopolized by Golden Boy Promotions, so it creates a very, very difficult situation for these young fighters, but they're going to be competing for the vacant WBO junior middleweight title. Guys, I can't wait to see it. I'm going to be covering this fight as well at Corpus Christi, Texas. JK, are we having a little trouble getting Mr. Demetrius Andrade on the line, sir? Well, I guess he's currently getting him. My goodness. But, yeah, a lot of great events coming up on the boxing calendar. That's going to be part of just one part of the great triple header. That's going to be on HBO. Also on that card is going to be the rematch, the long-awaited rematch between Nonito Donaire and Vic Darchinian. Now, guys, if you listen to the show regularly, you'll remember that Vic Darchinian was actually on the show several weeks ago when this fight was first announced. And he says that, look, Nonito Donaire has been living off of that knockout performance, and he never gave me the opportunity for a rematch. Vic Darchinian claims that he made Nonito Donaire, and he is going to break him on November 9th. He said he's going to retire the Filipino-American. Wow. It's going to be interesting to see, guys. And in the main event of the evening, it's going to be Mikey Garcia fighting for his second world title in two separate weight classes. And it's going to be against Mr. Roman Rocky Martinez from Puerto Rico. Guys, I can't wait for this. It's going to be an amazing event. We spoke with Mikey last week on the Pugilist Corner. He actually stated that, look, Roman Martinez is not a pushover, guys. I don't know why everyone seems to think that I'm just going to breeze through this fight. Rocky Martinez is a tough guy who brings a lot of intelligent pressure and throws a lot of punches. This is going to be a very difficult fight because he has the mentality of a champion. So I'm not expecting an easy fight, he stated. We'll find out if that's the case. When you look at the style matchup, for some strange reason, I think that Mikey Garcia is going to have a very easy time in the ring. When you look at the style matchup, this is a guy who fights very similarly to Orlando Salido, but doesn't really pack the kind of wallop that Salido actually brings to the ring. I think Mikey Garcia is in that elite level class in which he is going to really show his worth against Mr. Rocky Martinez. I think this is a horror show for the young Puerto Rican fighter. And Mikey Garcia is going to win his second world title. But is that the case? Several intangibles that make a huge difference in the ring, like mental toughness, heart, dedication. This is going to be very interesting. And whenever you have a world champion coming into the ring, yeah, boy, it's going to take a lot to break his will. And Rocky Martinez, as we saw in his title defense against Mr. Diego Magdaleno, as we saw then, boy, it's not so easy to lift the title off the incumbent champion. This is a gentleman who knows what it takes to actually defend that. Even if he's not the popular champion, even if people think that he's underrated and he's the underdog, it almost seems that Rocky Martinez embraces that role. It's going to be very interesting to see how he handles the superb counterpunching ability and the deceptive power of Mr. Mikey Garcia. This kid is a sharpshooter. He is one of the smartest fighters in all of boxing. He can pick you apart from start to finish. And it's amazing. His offense seems to be his defense as well. This is a guy who doesn't like to use the entire ring. He's going to stand his ground. And what he usually does to offensive-minded opposition He shuts them down with his superb counterpunching. As soon as they taste his power, they turn into tentative versions of themselves. Is that going to be the case on November 9th? We'll have to wait and see, guys. It's happening on HBO. It's going to be in Corpus Christi, Texas. I can't wait. It's going to be an incredible evening of three great fights on HBO. JK, what is the status, my friend? Well, it looks like we're still trying to get Mr. Demetrius Andrade. If we're having a problem, let's just move forward with the show, guys, and let's talk about the upcoming bouts. Mike Alvarado versus Ruslan Provodnikov this Saturday night. Guys, as Mr. James Gogi, master strategist, outlined on this past Sunday night's program, basically he stated, guys, look for a war. And if Mikey Alvarado tries to actually sit in the pocket and bang with this kid, he could be staring up at the lights very, very quickly. And I thought, Mike Alvarado, boy, he's been in some wars. I don't know if that's possible. He's been in the ring with several big, big punchers, Bam Bam Rios, Bradis Prescott. He also showed his craft in his last outing against Bam Bam Rios and against Mauricio Herrera. This is a guy that doesn't get enough credit for his boxing prowess. Ruslan Provodnikov seemed to have a lot of problems whenever Timothy Bradley actually used the entire ring, stuck the jab in his face. And he seemed to just be following around and not cutting off the ring effectively, Tim Bradley. Well, if he doesn't cut off the ring and get inside against a very, very hard puncher like Mike Alvarado, that's a recipe for disaster. He's going to be following around a huge, murderous puncher like Mike Alvarado. Mike Alvarado is as tough as it gets. He's got an iron will and a granite chin. It's going to be very interesting to see, though, because I don't know if he's going to be the same. Are we going to see the same Mike Alvarado after his wars, almost seemingly back to back to back to back? Yes, sir. James, do you have a status update for us, sir?
Yes, sir. It looks like Mr. Andrade won't be joining us tonight, so we'll be expecting Mr. Jennings' call at 10 minutes after the hour.
All right. Very good, sir. We will then look forward to – I'm sorry, when is Mr. Jennings going to be on the show, sir?
He'll be on at 10 minutes after the hour, 7:10.
Very good. Okay. We'll just – we apologize for any inconvenience, but we will reschedule Mr. Andrade whenever he's available. But right now, guys, we're going to keep focusing on Mike Alvarado versus Ruslan Provodnikov. Now, guys – we talked about this with Iceman John Scully. We look at the positives, the pros and cons of training in Denver, Colorado. Obviously, the upside to this is you're going to be training in high altitude. You're going to be in the best condition of your life if you take your training camp seriously with no distraction. Is that the case for Mike Alvarado? Fighting in your hometown, guys, that's never easy because you've got family, friends, everyone coming out of the woodwork trying to get a piece of the champ, trying to actually get free tickets to the fight with local media, everyone there trying to actually get a glimpse of the current title holder. How has Mike Alvarado been handling this? Well, hopefully we see the best version of Mike Alvarado show up in the ring because anything less could possibly get him stopped against a murderous puncher like Ruslan Provodnikov. Guys, you have to love this story of the Siberian train. This guy is ferocious and he's hungry. And if any of you guys were looking for signs as to the mentality leading up to this fight of either fighter, just watch Face Off with Max Kellerman on HBO. in which they spoke with both Ruslan Provodnikov and Mike Alvarado. Ruslan is a very hungry individual. He's been waiting for this. Again, like I stated, because of he's signed with Banner Promotions, the same promotional group that Demetrius Andrade is currently signed with as well. Because he's been signed with Artie Palullo and Banner Promotions, he really hasn't received that big, big opportunity. Not very many. His first opportunity came against Timothy Bradley, and a lot of people still believe that he should have won that fight. If the referee actually calls two knockdowns, like a lot of people feel that he should have, then Provodnikov wins that fight. So was this just a flash in the pan? Was this just an anomaly? His last performance against Tim Bradley, guys, we're going to find out on Saturday night. But just looking at the mindset of this guy, he's serious. He is so hungry to become a world champion. He's been waiting for this opportunity ever since he got involved in the sport of boxing. This kid doesn't just want to be a star. He wants to be the best, and he wants to prove that he is one of the biggest punchers and the best fighters in the world. When asked about this by Mr. Max Kellerman, he actually stated, you know, they presented this fight to me for, and they said, you're not going to be fighting for very much money. He said, I don't care. I just want my opportunity to show that I am the best. That's a scary man. That's a scary individual. And Mike Alvarado, they flashed to him and showed his face. And he's like, I've heard it before. I don't care. Look, I'm the current champ, and you're going to have to walk through fire in order to take my belt. You've seen it before in my fights with Bam Bam Rios, in my fight with Mauricio Herrera, in my fight with Bradis Prescott. All of these guys came into the ring thinking that they could actually dominate me and beat me. Well, you better kill me, because that's the only way you're getting my title. So, guys, this is going to be a tremendous event, and may the best man win. It's going to be taking place this Saturday night from Denver, Colorado, the Mile High City. We'll see which version of both men actually show up in the ring. We'll see who has the better chin. We'll see who has the harder punch. We'll see who is in the best condition.
Excuse me, Joseph.
Yes, sir.
I do have a good friend of yours on the line, Buster J. Maybe you'd like to spend a couple minutes with him before we get Mr. Jennings on the line.
Very good. Buster J, how are we doing tonight, my friend?
I'm just sitting here and enjoying the show.
Well, I tell you what, we apologize that we weren't able to speak with Mr. Demetrius Andrade, but, you know, my goodness, Joel Diaz had so much to say. I was actually a little surprised. I thought for sure he would say, you know what, we want Mayweather. We want Mayweather. We want him in the work. But no, he actually said, you know what, we need to close the chapter on Manny Pacquiao first. That's the fight that I want. Were you a little surprised when Joel actually stated that?
Surprised? That's an understatement. I was in shock. But, you know, he has really helped Timothy Bradley with his career, his guidance, his training, and I trust him, and I believe Tim trusts him as well.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing, and we love featuring Joel, man. He is one of the best ambassadors of the sport and one of the hardest working men in the entire business, and it shows. You know, Timothy Bradley, and, you know, he's not alone in thinking that, hey, you know what, that first fight, even though a lot of people think it was a gift decision, we know that we can beat Manny Pacquiao. You know, before we actually speak with Brian Jennings, my brother, how do you think that fight plays out, bro?
Ooh, you know, styles make fights. And Timothy, he has no issues with letting his hands go. And we know Pac-Man loves to throw a lot of punches as well. So I would be I'm very intrigued, and at this point a little reserved on even picking a winner on that one.
Yeah. You know, as strong mentally and physically as
I'm really still, this past weekend. After listening to you guys Sunday, I'm still really hyped up about Mike and the Russian. My question to you would be, do you foresee Mike being able to control the rage and not be so influenced by the hometown crowd? Will he stick to boxing, or do you foresee a couple of good exchanges from the Russian and Mike just going into his old slugging ways?
You know, that is a very insightful question. And again, that's one of the problems of a big, big star fighting in his hometown. First of all, Buster J, thank you so much for your call, brother. It's always great to speak with you. And, you know, you remember back 2002, my friend, when Vernon Forrest just signed that big contract with HBO a hard slugging fighter like Ricardo Mayorga in his hometown of Atlanta, Georgia?
And it has such a great thing with me.
And our friend, Mr. Lonnie Shields, was actually in his corner on that night. And he told me, he said, you know, Vernon knew what the game plan was. All he had to do was box this guy, but you're absolutely right. When you've got your family, your friends in attendance, when all of your buddies are cheering you on and they're egging you on and getting a dogfight, it's a lot easier said than done to stick to script. It's going to be very interesting to see if Mike Alvarado has that kind of discipline to do that, because when you're facing a murderous puncher like Ruslan Provodnikov, who seems to have a sledgehammer in both gloves, that's the last thing you want to do, man.
and the Russian, to me, he's so emotionally detached that, to me, it wouldn't matter if they were fighting in Russia or anywhere in the U.S. I don't think the crowd's going to have an impact on his performance. He's going in with a game plan, and I think his game plan will be, hey, this guy's probably want to start out boxing, and I'm going to jab him, hurt him, try to hurt him, and it's going to go my way. We're going to turn this thing into a rock'em sock'em robot.
You know, that's very insightful. And can Mike Alvarado, because you're absolutely right, he's the A side on this.
Right.
He's the guy who's expected to be the star. The onus of responsibility of forcing the action and making an entertaining bout is going to be all on him. He's fighting in his own town. You know, and we saw that against Nonito Donaire and Guillermo Rigondeaux, in which Nonito was the A-side fighter. He's the star. And so when the crowd started booing, the onus was on the star to create the action and to try and press the action and let his hands go, and it played right into the game plan of Guillermo Rigondeaux. So,
there's a lot of pressure
being the star, being the local favorite. And we're going to see how Mike Alvarado handles that. That is a great dramatic storyline, you know, for an already terrific matchup. Outstanding, brother. But Buster J, thank you so much for your call, my friend. We look forward to speaking with you, hopefully maybe this Sunday when the aftermath is already concluded. I mean, this is going to be a terrific event. And guys, yeah, I'm going to be right there inside covering the fight for Eastside Boxing. But JK, do we have Bye-Bye Jennings on the phone, my friend?
Yes, sir. Proper introductions, please.
Guys, it is a privilege to welcome this gentleman to the show for the first time. Heavyweight contender, American hopeful, one of the more athletic fighters in the entire heavyweight division. From Philly, Pennsylvania, Mr. Bryant. Bye-Bye Jennings. Bryant, how are you doing tonight, sir?
Hey, I'm good, man. I'm good. I'll be better after I put these miles in.
Well, you know, that's one of the things that it was really captured the imagination of most fight fans regarding your career is your seemingly undying dedication and work ethic, you know, towards bettering your craft. You know, Bryant, how difficult is it, though, man, being a heavyweight fighter in this version of boxing?
I mean, it's real difficult because it seems like the more skilled you are, you know, the less respect they, you know, they try to keep away from you. Because, you know, it's kind of like if you like boxing, right? And you like the Muhammad Ali's, you like the Sugar Ray Robinsons, you like the Tommy Hearns, you like the Marvin Hagler's, you like the Floyd Mayweather's, you like the Andre Ward's, and then, you know, you have a heavyweight, you know, not comparing, well, yeah, comparing myself to, you know, to those as far as like on a skill level or like, you know, type of, you know, the type of fighter. And then you got the other guys. You know, I mean, these guys, they don't show no completeness. They just fucking big punchers. And it just, I mean, that's all that they show. And it's like, they fall in love with them, but they say they love a Muhammad Ali or they say they love a Floyd Mayweather. It's like, I don't know, man. I think the bandwagon is just retarded right now. And I just think I think boxing needs to, you know, to be revived and to show its skill, you know, skill for skill. Like I like watching skill, like the Rigondeaux. I like watching that, but people call that boring. People call the Floyd Mayweathers now boring because they perfect the, you know, the sport of boxing.
You know, and that's very difficult for a young fighter like yourself. Very talented, very athletic, trying to perfect the sweet science, trying to be a technician in the ring. And all the while, it seems that these boxing promoters, my friend, are looking for the Mexican prototype that's going to be Rock'em Sock'em Robots in the ring. They say, well, those guys sell tickets. Those guys are more entertaining in the ring. But this is boxing after all, man. What are your thoughts on that? And has it greatly affected your ability to get fights?
Yeah. I mean, it has. But, you know, I also can blame it on my fast uprising because I've only been boxing. It hasn't even been 5 years yet. Like my total career boxing hasn't even reached 5 years. So, I mean, wherever I'm at right now, you know, it's still a blessing. But, you know, they say I should, you know, they say I should wait my turn. They say I should chill. They say I should fall back. There's been other guys in front of you and all this. But every time I look at them dudes, it's like, y'all mean to tell me y'all got me waiting for this person? Or y'all got me waiting for this? I mean, all these other fights out here is being made. And it's kind of like, yo, y'all just going to act like I ain't here? I mean, it's like damn. So, I mean, all that punching and all that—that's for dickheads. You know, that's for dummies. You know, getting punched and, you know, doing all that. I mean, I like to fight. That's because I can fight. I practice defense, but a lot of these guys don't practice defense, and I don't think they even care for their health. I mean, boxing is a tough sport. It's not a sport to be in for many years if you're just one of them rock'em sock'em type guys. Like you ain't gonna have a guy that's getting the crap beat out of him his whole career. Like, sooner or later, mm-hmm. It's going to take a toll on him. You either going to be slow, dumb, or dumber because you was already dumb for staying in it. So, I mean, I just like to practice, you know, perfection. I mean, I know I ain't the best, but I practice defense, and I just think where I'm at right now and who I'm compared to, I just think I think I'm at a good level. I think, you know, I think I'm in a great position. And I just think it's just fear to see what I can become sometimes. Like, I know a lot of people may believe in me, but a lot of people would doubt me. A lot of people would say, oh, he's a small heavyweight, this small heavy. What you mean small heavyweight? Like, you put me next to all of my opponents. All these guys weigh more than me. But my arm mass, my shoulder mass, my hands, my fists, my feet, my legs is way bigger than theirs. They just got a lot of meat on them, man. These dudes is, I mean, it's getting sick, but I got to do what I got to do because I'm already knee deep in it. So I'm definitely going, you know, I'm definitely going all the way with this. It's nothing I can do. I guess it's too late to turn back. But if I would have had a decision to make, I probably would have been like, man, you know what, man, forget this, man. But you know, this is my bread and butter, and I can't deny that. And I'm gonna make these dudes pay.
We love your enthusiasm, brother. And, you know, it's got to be difficult, though, Brian, because we look at the politics of boxing, my friend, and all you want to do is focus on bettering your craft, and all you want to do is get in the ring and fight. How tough has it been the second half of this year? Because it looked like sky was the limit. Main Events was really showcasing you as the next big star of the heavyweight division. And then all of a sudden, they put the brakes on your career, force you into this position where, you know what, I need to go look for somewhere else. And they had done a masterful job at guiding your career up to that point. How, and all the while, all you want to do is just fight. So how difficult is it for a prize fighter to be stuck in this mire of political progress, my friend?
Yeah, I just think that, we just had two different visions because, I mean, like the way they were thinking, or the way I think that they were thinking, is the simple fact that, you can't really sit a human being on a shelf, because inactivity definitely affects your craft also. So it's like, I'm a machine, but I'm a machine to myself. You know, but, like, you just can't literally sit me on the shelf and just hope I'm still able the next go around, or just say, I mean, but I kind of also blame it on my upbringing, and I think I don't think that they thought that maybe I would not film, but the people, or boxing maybe not to do as well with certain opponents that was faced in front of me because of how fast I came up and the things that I had done. So it's kind of like myself on them. So it's normal to, to go into this confusion state of, what do we do now, or how do we do this? And, but I mean, I guess they would look at me and just think of it as, this guy's not ready mentally, or, this guy, I don't think, he has enough experience. I mean, for whatever reason. But I have great confidence in myself and my life. I'm a grown man. I'm 29 years old. I've been around. I've been this size since I was 14. So I've been hanging around grown men forever. Going through the club, being somebody's security at 15 years old, being in the streets, doing everything. I've been through everything. So I'm an experienced man. A lot of these dudes ain't experienced nothing. They haven't experienced jack. You know what I mean, just because you've been boxing all your whole life, you think you could just orchestrate a ring and do whatever? Nah, this is a game of life that we play when we get in this boxing ring, because it's not only the skills that you practice on every day, it's the skills that it's your brain, it's your mindset that your brain just uses. Your brain is to think. Your brain operates your whole body. But a lot of these guys don't even know how to operate their brain, so let alone their whole body. So, I mean, I've been a master of thinking. I've been a master of a lot of things before I got into boxing. So that's how I feel, as though I can feel comfortable with demanding certain things that people say I'm not ready for.
You know, what's amazing is that before, I mean, you really had to really prove your mettle in the ring when you were with Main Events Boxing. Mm-hmm. Because all the while, for, NBC Sports Network at NBC, the great Hall of Fame matchmaker, Mr. Russell Peltz, was doing the matchmaking for you and for Kathy Duva. And that guy doesn't know the meaning of an easy fight. My goodness. I mean, you're fighting tough guy after tough guy after tough guy. Has that road prepared you for what's about to happen under the Gary Shaw promotional banner?
It definitely showed me that I definitely can, move through a lot of things. But just think, I always would think some guys were easy. Honestly, I haven't. My hardest fight was with Bayon, and that was because I took it off like a 5 days notice, and and I was just doing a lot of huffing and puffing, and I had to whip up this mentality, or just dig deep, to control myself within these 5 days of to get into an area where I haven't seen, which was 10 rounds, and, TV, that was the first for everything. So I had to whip myself all up in them 5 days. So I would just consider that fight my toughest fight. But a lot of these other guys, you know, I'm not going to say they're easy because I'm not going, you know, say. But I mean, it was a piece of cake for real, for real. Once you figure out a guy, but a lot of these guys, you know, a lot of the guys now are just like, they're just like knockout artists. Like, that's about all they are. Like, I think I'm much better with the better fighter, a guy who thinks he's more technical than me, or a guy who thinks he can counter better than me. That's when I'm really talented. But when I have to fight, I have to duck unorthodox punches and crazy haymakers and all that. I'm like, look, dog, calm down. I mean, once I figure you out, it's a wrap. But like, I think I've asked for way higher, you know, ranked opponents. You know, right after my Lyakovich fight, because I actually took the Lyakovich fight like maybe 2-3 weeks after my Bion fight. So if I just told you how tough that was, you know, I took that fight, which was supposed to be, you know, way over my head. You know, at the time I only had 12 fights, and he was a former world champion. You know, so I took that fight. You know, right after that, I asked for Helenius. I asked for Robert Helenius. Why? Because Lyakovich somewhat gave him, you know, a good run for his money. You know, that was his opponent before me. So I was like, well, shoot, why not go ask for him? Like, don't wait around. I think I can take these guys now. But you know, I didn't get it, probably because the vision was just different. You know, and I don't fault them for anything, but it just was the way that they, you know, that they ran things. And, you know, that was our differences, and, you know, that's what separated us, and that's what caused us to, you know, to depart. But just think about it. My last five opponents had more knockouts than I had fights. So,
wow. You know, what's amazing, Glenn? I'm sorry. Yeah. Go ahead, sir.
No. I was about to say something small, but I was about to say, I think the higher you go in the rankings, the easier these guys just get. Because a lot of them are just sugar-coated, and a lot of them are still really, really needed to be tested. And they always say who fought who. I mean, nobody really fought nobody if you really think about it. I mean, well, if you had fought somebody, you ain't beat them. So it was like, if you lost to somebody, lost to somebody, then he lost to him. He beat him, but he lost to somebody who both of y'all lost to. So it's like, yeah, none of y'all really proving yourself if y'all really want to say something about it. But go ahead.
No, man, I love hearing you talk, man. You're very insightful. But I did want to ask you about the heavyweight division. We just saw on the biggest stage of boxing, Vladimir Klitschko defend his titles against the WBA regular champion, whatever that means, Mr. Alexander Povetkin. And a lot of people seem to really frown on those performance on that fight, saying that, oh, you know, that's just typical of the heavyweight division. What were your thoughts on that fight, and what do you have to say to the detractors, the continuous just bashing that they actually do to the heavyweight division? Your thoughts on that, my friend?
Yeah, well, I think it was a disgrace to the heavyweight division, and I don't think it did any justice for us, you know, as heavyweights. But I mean, yeah, that performance was, I mean, it was ugly. I mean, it was ugly, and I just think that, you know, I thought that Vladimir may have, you know, some more skill, and or, you know, or at least a lot more love for the game. That was his highest payday, and you know, you go out there and you do that. I mean, you get to show what real champions is about. Like, that's not what we look for, you know, in a great heavyweight matchup. Like, and then for Povetkin, he did try, but I just don't think he had any fight in him to really, you know, overcome that, because I'll tell you right now, if you do something like that to me, I'm hitting you low. We're gonna stop this. We're gonna break all this up right now. You ain't gonna keep doing that to me. Like, I mean, I'm gonna do something. And I just think it was a couple punches that maybe he could have got out of there with, or maybe he could have just worked on a lot of things. But I mean, like, then I'm not in there, but I felt as though I've done it before. As far as, like, you know, practice wise, and practice a lot of things, and had guys, you know, do those things. That don't really mean that I could have, you know, overcame that in that fight. But what I'm saying is, it was ugly, and I would have just had for anybody, not even myself, to just, you know, try some other way. Or Vladimir, please stop holding. You know, you got a good jab. You know, show the world that you got five more years left in you. You know what I mean, you giving everybody on the outside hope. Now these guys growing coverage, they're getting chest hairs now, thinking, okay, the heavyweight division is almost over. Vlad looking bad, you know, we almost there. You know, he one more fight, and he gone. Now we just gonna go for that title because you know that's what everybody waiting for. You know, all these opponents, they looking for payday other than looking to beat this dude and becoming the heavyweight champion of the world that defeated one of the Klitschko's. Like, you don't know how great that is. Like, that's, I would rather defeat one of the Klitschko's than to get the heavyweight division, to get the heavyweight belt, you know, off of vacancy. Like, who gives a shit about a vacancy? The market value is going to be so low. I don't know why they wait till after the Klitschko's. You got to go get them now to keep up that market value. So therefore, when it's over and you have it, now you maintain that market value, and now you're on top. I mean, but if it goes vacant, oh man, I feel sorry for the person. I mean, people, you gonna be something. I mean, come on, heavyweight champion. I mean, we ain't gonna be making much if y'all sitting around waiting for somebody to leave, and then you know you get a bum that don't make nothing anyway. Get on top, and you gonna say, well, you never made nothing your whole career. Now you about to make another nothing. So now both of y'all ain't gonna make nothing, and the whole fight ain't gonna be worth nothing. Y'all gotta build it all back up. So what I'm trying to say is, I would like to defeat one of the Klitschko's to maintain at least that market value, to maintain that, to get that greatness. You beat one of the Klitschko's, you're automatically going down in history. Because they are having, Vladimir is having one hell of a run.
You know what's amazing, Bryant, is that is very, very insightful, and we love your passion, and you're right on the money. Because you look at the problems that Vladimir Klitschko and Vitaly Klitschko have endured in trying to, I guess, make themselves that champion, that universally recognized champion. After Lennox Lewis retired, there was no one really to pass the torch. And you're absolutely right. They've had a hard time gaining that universal respect. Even though they're so dominant, everyone talks about, well, who have they beaten? Well, who have they beaten? So, yeah, you're absolutely right, my friend. So before we actually let you go, Brian, we want to get your thoughts on, again, congratulations with signing a deal with Gary Shaw Promotions. You know, Gary seems to really care about all of his fighters. Is that why you signed with Gary Shaw Promotions? Is it because of his dedication and his nurturing qualities for his fighters?
That was one of the reasons, but one of the main reasons is because, you know, to move forward, and it was an honor to have him as, you know, one of the possibilities, and it's an honor to, you know, for him to grant this position as my promoter. That's the reason why he was one of the possibilities, we've seen that, you know, that he takes, you know, that he takes good pride in his fighters, and we felt as though that, you know, we could have a good position, and you know, this would be, you know, the start of his new heavyweight era, you know, and you know, bringing me on with the team, and you know, and I just think it was a good move. I agree with my decision. I agree with my manager's decision, and we came together, and we felt as though this is the right thing to do. And, you know,
last question, Bryant. Last question. Okay. We have a couple minutes left in your segment. Last question. A lot of people, they think that the blueprint on beating Vladimir Klitschko is to apply pressure, get on the inside, and really test his chin. But that doesn't seem to work. All he does is tie you up and lean on you. But then we put in an athletic, young, heavyweight that can use the entire ring and make Vladimir Klitschko take the lead, something that he doesn't ordinarily do. Is that, you think, the key to handing Vladimir Klitschko his first loss in over 10 years?
You know, that's one of the keys. But, you know, all these fighters have tried and all of them have failed. So that key might not work, but you got to go in there knowing that key is going to work, whether you think it's going to work or not, in the back of your mind. But, yeah, I believe that, you know, using angles, you know, orchestrating, you know, bringing in different, you know, different ideas. You know, I mean, Vladimir, he's definitely a technician. He's going to catch on. he's going to catch on. So you got to have more than one plan. And just applying pressure and getting to the body and testing his chin, that's not enough. You just have to have a whole arsenal of different styles, you know, different techniques in order to attack him with and just keep him guessing, just keep him confused. I mean, it's going to be very hard to confuse the more experienced, the bigger, the stronger guy in him. But, hey, look, fuck all that. Confuse the shit out of him. Use everything you got. Go for broke. It's your world title. This is your goal. You win this, you've achieved your goal. You've achieved your main goal. So, I mean, don't hold back on nothing. If you're athletically inclined or if you're technically inclined, use it to your ability and confuse the shit out of him. And just know that you're better than him and he ain't better than you, and you're going to come out on top as the new heavyweight champion of the world.
His name is Brian Jennings, 17-0 with 9 knockouts, American heavyweight hopeful. Now fighting under the Gary Shaw promotional banner. Bryant, you know, we love your enthusiasm, and we hope to have you back very, very soon, as soon as your very next huge bout is announced. So, again, we love to have you back, and we love speaking with you tonight. So thank you so much for gracing the airways of the Pugilist Corner, my friend.
All right, you're welcome. Good to have me.
God bless you, brother. And, guys, we look forward to seeing Brian Jennings fight very, very soon under the Gary Shaw banner. But, guys, another fighter who is actually fighting for Gary Shaw Promotions as well. He's 17-0 as well with 9 knockouts, and he just had a big victory this past Friday night in Santa Ynez, California. I'm referring to super bantamweight prospect Mr. Roman Morales. Roman, how are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Well, doing great now that you're on the line, my friend. I tell you what, brother, this is an exciting time to be in the super bantamweight division. You know, you look at all the stars there. This is one of the deepest divisions in boxing. You know, what is it like? You're on the cusp of possibly getting a title opportunity in 2014. Do you feel that you are ready to get that brass ring of boxing, my friend?
Yes, I feel ready for whatever's up ahead, and pretty excited about it. Just being ready the whole time.
Yeah, you know, let's talk about your big victory over Roberto Castañeda, and it took place on Friday night. You know, this is a tough guy with a lot of fights. You know, what was it like actually facing this gentleman, knowing that he wasn't going to lay down for you?
I knew it was going to be pretty tough. I have seen some of his fights against Gary Russell and Christopher Martin, and he was putting some good pressure, and I knew he was going to be pretty tough, but I also knew that we were prepared and ready for this fight to go for the victory.
Yeah, absolutely, and you look tremendous doing it, you know, to everyone who actually was there to witness that. Super bantamweight division, who do you see as being the, I mean, you look at Leo Santa Cruz, the guy looks absolutely tremendous. He's going to be fighting once again on November 30th in San Antonio, Texas at the Freeman Coliseum. You know, how do you actually view Leo Santa Cruz, and when do you feel that you're going to be ready to take on that level of opposition, my friend?
He looks pretty tough. He has a good style. It's pretty good, and I'm hoping, I know next year I'll be on that level and ready to face people like that. It's a big opportunity, and once I see the opportunity, I'm going to take it.
Yeah, you know, who do you view as the top dogs at 122? Because it seems that a lot of the big name fighters are jumping ship and moving to featherweights. Do you feel that this is somewhat, I guess, fate? This is the natural progression where it's really opening up these doors for very talented young fighters like yourself?
Yeah, to me, one of the top fighters was Adrian Matos, but what happened to his last fight, he was going up in a weight, but to me, he was one of the top fighters, and I was hoping later on in the future to face him.
You know, what were your thoughts when you actually saw that? I mean, a gentleman like Johnny Gonzalez, you can't take someone like that lightly. And I don't think that Alvin Matas did, but he seemed to be looking forward, looking past Johnny Gonzalez, and looking for possibly a big, big money fight with Gary Russell Jr., and obviously he paid the price for it. How difficult is that when you see the road ahead, but you know that you have to step in the ring and face a very tough guy like you just faced this past Friday? How difficult is it to stay focused on the task at hand?
Well, to me, whenever we have an opponent coming up, we just focus on him. We don't think about anything else. Who am I going to fight afterwards? I don't care about that. I just care about the person I'm going to fight next, because anything can happen. Any lucky punch can happen at any moment. And that's what happened to him. He got caught with that good hook and sets him down. And Johnny Gonzalez, he's no one to be undermissed. And he's pretty good. And he just got caught pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there's a big, big fight happening December 21st. And it's going to be Kiko Martinez versus Jeffrey Matabula. Kiko Martinez is a great story. Obviously, he was featured on HBO. He was the big underdog going into facing the former IBF Super Bantamweight champion, Mr. Jonathan Romero. Well, we all saw what happened as well. I mean, it was a lot like the – of course, it wasn't a one-punch knockout in the first round like Johnny Gonzalez, but it was another case where you really can't afford to look past anyone in this business. Now – what were your thoughts when you saw Kiko Martinez really take it to Jonathan Romero to capture that IBF Super Bantamweight title on HBO?
I was pretty amazed because Romero, he's a really good boxer, and I had seen him fight at the Gary Shaw show once at Santa Inez, and he could box, but after I seen what happened to him, I was just pretty amazed. There's different styles, and sometimes your style doesn't work with somebody else, and you just get caught.
Yeah, it's tough, and it's very sobering when you actually see that happen. Does this actually motivate you to work even harder when you see something like that happen?
Yeah, it does, because it shows that there's so many different types of styles out there, and different way people fight, and it just makes me want to be better and better and push harder every day.
Yeah, so let's talk about your career. You know, what actually got you involved in boxing?
Well, my coach, he's my uncle, so it's kind of like a family thing. He used to be a boxer, and I used to play soccer, and San Arda's a really small town. And so if anything new happens, everybody knows about it. And, well, that's what happened with boxing. It was new in San Arda, so I found out and decided to come and check it out. And I liked it. I wanted to stay with it.
You know, what's amazing is, in the beginning of the show, I was actually speaking with Iceman John Scully, former light heavyweight contender and now expert trainer. And he was talking about all of the distractions that these young fighters seem to bring with them in the ring. And we were talking about, you know, he goes, it's the damnedest thing. And he said, so many young fighters, you know, they'll be sparring, and all of a sudden, they'll take breaks to check their messages on their iPhone. You know, do you feel that that's the difference between you and a lot of young fighters in the gym, is that you stay dedicated and you don't let any distractions get the better of you in the gym?
Yeah, I know when I enter the gym, is nothing else on my mind, just the gym, and to work hard, hit the bag, the heavy bag, with mitts, cardio, everything. That's all I think about when I enter that door to the gym, and the bell starts, it's just workout time and nothing else. Gotta take it serious, because in this game, in this sport, it's anything can happen, and I gotta be focused at all times.
Yeah, just like Manuel Stewart used to say, boy, you can play football, you can play baseball, you can play basketball, but you can't play boxing. It's serious business, and you could get just seriously, seriously injured, where it'll affect the rest of your life if you're not 100% focused. Do you truly believe that?
Yes, I do. That's a good thing, because I think it's pretty true. Any punch could damage you, damage your life, and that's something that we don't want. So, and we're pretty young. I'm a pretty young fighter, and I want to keep on going. I don't want just one punch to finish me off. So I gotta be serious and focused.
Yeah, absolutely. Now there's a big fight coming up on November 9th, and it's going to be taking place in the featherweight division. But these two gentlemen, for a while, have been stalwarts of the 122-pound weight division. So I'd like to get your test your boxing prowess, so to speak. And I'm referring to the upcoming matchup on November 9th between Nonito Donaire and Vic Darchinian. What are your thoughts on this fight? Who wins and why, brother?
I think Nonito Donaire will win. He's a really smart fighter. He knows how to box. He has good power. Vic Darchinian, it's like he just throws kind of wild. He has experience and everything, but I just think Nonito Donaire is just the better boxer and all-around fighter.
You know, what were your thoughts when you saw Nonito Donaire get thoroughly outboxed by a real master of the craft like Guillermo Rigondeaux, two-time gold medal winner? You know, now he is the universally recognized champ of the 122-pound weight division. Did you actually see this coming, or did it surprise you as it unfolded on the biggest stage of boxing, HBO?
That surprised me. I was totally going for Nonito, and I thought he was going to win. But when I saw that, I was like, wow, man. Boxing, huh? Full of surprises. So, yeah, I was pretty surprised.
You know, how did he do it? How did Guillermo Rigondeaux do it in your mind? I mean, do you think Nonito Donaire just looked past Guillermo Rigondeaux? And it is what we've been talking about. You really can't take anyone lightly. Do you think he didn't anticipate the speed and the power of Guillermo Rigondeaux?
No, I don't think so. I think he was focused and he tried, and just Rigondeaux is a really good boxer, and he just got out boxed.
Wow. So you look at, Rigondeaux is the class right now of 122. Is there anyone right now who really comes close, or do you think that it's just a damn shame that we probably won't ever see Leo Santa Cruz face Guillermo Rigondeaux because of the top-ranked Golden Boy rivalry?
That's a bummer, but Rigondeaux, I don't know, right now he seems like the top dog right now, and it's going to be pretty hard to bring him down. He's pretty smart. All around fighter, he's good.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough outing indeed for anyone to give him his first professional loss. Now, did you get a chance to see Vasyl Lomachenko this past weekend on the top rank card and making his pro debut? What are your thoughts on him?
Who was that again? Hey.
What were your thoughts on Vasyl Lomachenko? He made his professional debut this past Saturday night. He's going to be fighting at 126. What were your thoughts on Vasyl? Do you actually think that maybe he has an opportunity or a chance to really blossom as one of the big stars of the sport?
I actually didn't get to see his fight.
Ah, okay. So you didn't throw down for the big pay-per-view this past Saturday night, brother. ¿Por qué?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think a lot of people fall into that category. But, you know, Roman, we'd like to give your parting shots for all of your fans who came out and supported you this past Friday night. And we really appreciate your time. But please tell all of your fans and all of the listeners where to find you when you're not on the Pugilist Corner or in the ring, brother.
I'll be on Facebook, Roland Morales. Either on Twitter. I finally got a Twitter on the Roland Morales also. You'll find me there. I appreciate everything, all your support, and all your cheers.
Very good, Roman. Thank you so much for gracing the airwaves tonight on the Pugilist Corner, and we'll definitely keep our eye out for your blossoming career as one of the top young prospects in the super bantamweight division. Thank you for being on the air, my friend.
Thank you very much.
Well, guys, that was Roman Morales. He's undefeated, 17-0 with 9 knockouts. JK, who are we going to speak with next, my friend?
Yes, sir. We have in the queue Mr. Alejandro Luna, and then we will be speaking with Mr. Demetrius Andrade.
Very good. Guys, it's a pleasure to welcome this gentleman back to the show. He is one of the best prospects in the packed lightweight division. 15-0 with 11 knockouts. Welcoming to the show at this time, Mr. Alejandro Luna. Alejandro, how are you doing, my friend?
Doing pretty good, doing pretty good. Just getting ready for our upcoming fight this Saturday. And it's a pleasure being with you guys on the show once again.
Well, I tell you what, we love spotlighting your career, man. To me, you are one of the best young fighters at 135, and absolutely at the age of 21, man. How are you handling all of this attention, brother?
Oh, it's been great. I believe it just comes with the territory. It comes with the hard work, and right now we're just really putting that aside and just focusing on the gym and working hard and getting ready for a fight.
Yeah, absolutely. You're going to be taking on a guy who's a tough, tough fight veteran, Daniel Atta. And this is a guy, yeah, he's been knocked out before, but he's also pulled off a couple of upsets. You know, what are you actually looking forward to seeing in the ring this coming up Saturday night?
Well, I can expect a crafty, savvy veteran. We know Daniel Atta is a tough guy. He's a savvy veteran, and we just have to be prepared in every way possible because we know he does have that experience and has been in there with top-rated guys, so we just have to be ready.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a gentleman who can seemingly take a good punch. He's a crafty guy. He's a tough, mentally tough and physically tough guy, always comes in shape. But earlier this year, boy, he was starched by Mr. Omar Figueroa. Do you think that's going to be playing in his mind when he sees the heavy-handed Mr. Alejandro Luna in the ring as well?
Oh, well, what can I tell you guys? Me and Figueroa are two different guys, but we're just going to go in there and do our own thing, you know? We don't really think about things like that because once we're in the ring, I mean, it's a different story. So we'll just find out in there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, how difficult is it though? Because when you see someone like a really tough guy like Daniel Atta come up a cropper against another guy in your division, right? How difficult is it to actually, you know, you look at that? That isn't necessarily a representation of who he is in the ring. What is your mindset then going into this fight? I mean, do you just prepare yourself to go, to go a bunch of hard rounds with this gentleman? And this is your first, is this your first 10-round fight coming up on Saturday night?
Yes, like you said, this is my first 10-round fight coming Saturday night. And just like you said, I mean, we prepare to go all 10 rounds, tough rounds, and we're just ready for whatever he brings to the table. We're ready to adapt, whether he wants to box it out or whether he wants to brawl. But we're definitely going to be fighting intelligently in there and just getting ready to give a good, hard fight for all the fans that are going to be out there and give a great show.
Yeah, you know, how does it feel actually being the headliner on this event? I mean, this is a big deal. Obviously, the next progression is, yeah, you know, to be featured on maybe some of the networks. And, you know, so how much pressure is this for you, being the big headliner and knowing that this could be, could catapult your career to something very, very special?
Wow, it's great. Just knowing that we're going to be headlining our first event, and what can I tell you? I mean, it's going to be almost in my backyard. It's going to be at the Pico Rivera Sports Arena in my hometown. So we're just excited, and not really so much pressure, but just it gives us that extra motivation while we're at the gym, while we're at the gym and while waking up in the morning, you know, 5 a.m. to get to start our road work. I mean, it just gives us that extra motivation to push a little harder, knowing that we're going to be in front of our hometown, in front of all these fans. So not necessarily pressure, because we set that aside, we block it, and we just train hard for this fight, and we're ready to go.
Yeah, you know what's amazing is you look at Mike Alvarado, who's going to be fighting in Colorado on the same evening, and he's somewhat in the same position where, wow, he's going to be the headliner, he's the star of the show, and he's around his family, his friends, all of his supporters there. You know, and he's facing a guy who can punch. This is a really tough guy. You know, how do you think he's going to actually handle the pressure of that, being in his hometown? And we know you're in a similar situation. Obviously, it's on a different stage, it's on a different level. But, you know, if you had to give a guy like Mike Alvarado some advice, what would it be? I know he's a fight veteran. He's been through it all. But this is new for him, being on this big of a stage, being in front of his family, his friends. He's never been involved in something like this. You know, what would you actually tell him if you had to give him some advice on how to handle hometown pressure?
Oh, wow. Well, that fight, it's actually on the same day as my fight. And wow, there's going to be fireworks, definitely going to be fireworks in that fight from Alvarado and from Polonnikov. But coming from a fighter like myself, I believe I wouldn't be able to give advice to a veteran, like a veteran and a world champion like Mike Alvarado. I mean, that guy is already in that level, and as time goes, we're learning, and we're taking every fight at a time, and I believe we'll be in that caliber someday in our weight class. But wow, that's going to be a great fight this Saturday. I mean, you can definitely expect fireworks, and I know Mike is a very hard worker, so I believe he's gonna take everything fine and smooth and take care of business.
Yeah, because that's I mean, he seems to be one of the blossoming stars of boxing. But yeah, this is different. I mean, when you're faced with that kind of pressure fighting in your hometown. Yeah, I mean, I brought this up on the show a little bit earlier, and I was referring to Vernon Forrest back in 2002 defending his title in front of his hometown fans on the biggest stage of boxing, fighting a really tough, young, relatively unknown fighter by the name of Ricardo Mayorga. And, you know, it's different. There's a lot of pressure to really make the fight entertaining, and he got baited into a dogfight. I'm thinking that, you know, there's a very good possibility that this could happen to Mike Alvarado. What are your thoughts on that, you know, in really sticking to the script, sticking to the game plan and the pressures of putting on a great show in front of your fans, hometown fans?
Well, definitely. Right now that you were mentioning Ricardo Mayorga and one of the late greats, Vernon Forrest, I mean, it just brought back memories as being a child and watching the fight, a young teenager watching the fight. And, well, now that you mentioned it, I mean, there is ways that you can get off your game plan, because sometimes you want to give your fans a great show and look impressive, but I believe sometimes you just have to stick to the game plan and don't get caught up in all the fans and knowing that you're in hometown, and just block that out and just try to do your own thing and just give it all you got.
Yeah, so, you know, going into your big, big headlining debut, you know, and you're going to be in front of your hometown fans, you know, you're saying that, yeah, I'm going to have the discipline. I'm not going to fall into that trap, brother. I'm going to have the discipline. I'm going to stick to script, and I'm going to take care of business, because there's a very promising road up ahead in the wide-open 135-pound weight division. Is that what you're saying to all of our listeners, brother?
Definitely. We're gonna try to go in there and just give a great show to everybody and go in there and give it all we got.
Well, to anyone who is in the area, how can they get a hold of some tickets, Alejandro?
Oh, wow, they're actually on Ticketmaster now. You can get them at the door at the Pico Rivera Sports Arena. There will be selling tickets. And just hopefully all fight fans, local fight fans here in California, Southern California, can make it.
Absolutely, brother. So, again, when you're not on the program and you're not in the ring, how can we actually look you up, Alejandro?
You guys can look me up on Facebook, Twitter. Actually, on Twitter, it's under AlexLuna91. On my Facebook, it is Alex Luna El Charrito. And you guys can also follow me on Instagram, Alex_Luna1.
Excellent, brother. Well, I tell you what, we wish you nothing but the best of luck, my friend. And we're definitely going to keep our eye on your blossoming career in the wide open 135-pound weight division. And I tell you what, we expect great things from you, man. So thank you so much for being on this edition of the Pugilist Corner. You're a great guy to speak to, and we look forward to featuring you once again after you're victorious this Saturday night, brother.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure being on the show, like always, and we're just going to keep working hard, and hopefully we can be on the show once again. Thank you, guys.
Awesome. We look forward to featuring you, Alex. You're a great guy, man. Thank you so much, and best of luck, brother, this Saturday night at the Sports Arena in Pico Rivera, California. Thank you so much, brother.
Thank you.
Well, I tell you what, guys, we're almost at the close of our program, but as our producer promised, we should be speaking with Mr. Demetrius Andrade before we actually close out the show. JK, what is the status on that, my friend? Well, I guess we're currently trying to get him. Guys, I tell you what, we apologize for any inconvenience in actually trying to feature Mr. Andrade, but he doesn't do very many interviews, and we do want to get him his spotlight, give him his opportunity to promote his career. That's what this show is all about, guys. You know, we're not in the business of standing up any fighters. We're not in the business of trying to actually make a name for ourselves at the expense of these young. So that's exactly what we're in the business of doing. But I tell you what, JK, do we have some good news regarding Mr. Demetrius Andrade?
Yes, sir. Proper introductions, please. Mr. Andrade is in the queue.
Very good. Guys, it is a privilege to welcome this gentleman to the Pugilist Corner for the first time. Undefeated. He's going to be taking on Mr. Vanya Smartarosian on November 9th in Corpus Christi, Texas. Introducing Mr. Demetrius Andrade. Demetrius, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing good. I'm sorry for the misunderstanding. You know, I was in my training camp getting my sparring in, and but everything's going smooth. Everything's going real great.
Well, I tell you what, you have a lot of fans that listen to the show, and yeah, everyone's. They can't wait to see you get your first major world title on November 9th, you know, in Corpus Christi, Texas. How excited are you, man, to be getting this big opportunity on the biggest stage of boxing, HBO?
I'm very excited. You know, this is something I've been working for my whole career as a professional fighter. You know, I told people when I was six years old, 7 years old, when I found out about the Olympics, I was going to make it to the Olympics, and I did that, and now I'm telling people I'm going to be a world champion, undefeated for many years to come, and November 9th, I'm going to show that day that I'm the man.
Absolutely, man, and we can't wait. Now, you're going to be taking on, wow, very tough, crafty, technical fighter, and is a former Olympian as well, Mr. Vanya Smartarosian. This is a gentleman who is a sharpshooter, a very good counterpuncher, good hand speed, decent pop on his shots. You know, how are you going to actually take apart this guy in the ring, my friend?
I'm just going to do what I've been doing. You know, picking my opponents apart and just showing how much superior I have in my skills and my will over him. That's all. You know, I'm going in there and do what I've been doing, and that's winning. Whatever it takes.
Well, yeah, you've looked great up to this point, but seemingly, I mean, your last bout was a little while back, and it was against Mr. Freddie Hernandez, in which you looked absolutely tremendous, my friend, and you put yourself in line for the WBO junior middleweight title, but you've had to wait because of the injury suffered to Bison Gurov. Now it's been vacated. The WBO did the right thing in making him vacate the title. But how difficult has it been to wait for this opportunity?
You know, it was frustrating at first. But, you know, I kept grounded, kept my spirits up, knowing, like, you know what, they're going to give me more time just to get stronger, get faster, chopping up the tools, and just be all around well prepared for November 9th. That's all they did. They gave me a lot of time to get ready for this, and I guess Vanez is going to have to take Zerbeck's black eye at this point.
We love your confidence, brother. You know what's amazing, Demetrius, is, man, you're 6'1". You're a southpaw. You are a huge junior middleweight fighter. How difficult has it been to maintain 154, and how long do you see yourself stick around in the packed junior middleweight division?
You know, as time goes on, people do grow. Right now, you know, I'm still making 154. The weight is always, you know, one of the difficult part about boxing, but it's part of the game. Come November 8th, I will be at 154. You know, as time go on and I defend this belt a few times, you know, eventually I'll probably gonna end up moving up. But, you know, just staying disciplined, eating healthy and just watching everything I do, you know, I don't diet, I live it. So, you know, that's why I'm capable of staying at this weight for so long and so far that I've been here.
You know, what's amazing is we just recently saw on HBO a gentleman who you're familiar with who fights under the Banner Promotions, stable, a gentleman by the name of Brian Vetta. And we basically saw what a fighter shouldn't do when he fought, actually, Chavez Jr. Chavez Jr., do you think it's somewhat disrespecting the sport to have him just balloon up and he just gave all of, I mean, he shows up at a fight. It's supposed to be originally for 160, then 163, then 165, then 168. It ended up being at 173. Is that what not to do? And how did you feel watching your friend Brian Vetta actually go through that?
I mean, it was even difficult for me because I was actually supposed to be on one of the cards that one of the dates they had for that Vera and Chavez fight. Well, since that was going up and down and all around, so, you know, they end up moving mine. They was moving mine all over the place because of that. They wanted me on the Pacquiao fight and China with Rio, and then they wanted me here. So somehow, you know, we was capable of getting it done November 9th, the triple header, and, you know, that was a blessing. I didn't have to go overseas to Russia to fight Zerbeck, you know, so I got to go overseas to fight China, to China to fight him over there. So, you know, I'm glad it all worked out for me. And just watching that fight, you know, let me know, like, it's pretty much going to be almost the same situation, you know, Banner Promotions against Top Rank, Bob Arum and Adi Palulu. But I'm not, you know, I control my own destiny. I believe I'm a more sharper, experienced guy than Vanez and, you know, them two, Vanez, I mean, Vera and Chavez. I'm going there for war, for blood, and I'm coming out with that WBO one way or another.
Boy, you just answered my next question because I was going to state segueing into that. You know, how nervous are you? Does it even enter your mind you're going to be fighting in the state of Texas? You're going to be fighting on a top-ranked fight card. Do you feel that you have to get the knockout in order to take that belt home?
I don't feel like I have to. I feel like I need to go in there and be superior and, you know, let the people know, like, I'm winning every round, like, conspicuously, and they see that I'm out here willing to put it all online for this belt, and I'm just going out there and do what I've been doing.
You know, this is
and then I'm going to look for the knockout. I'm going to wear his ass down. I'm going to let people know, like, yo, this is mine.
I love it. Again, I love your enthusiasm, man, and you're doing a great job promoting the fight. Now, this has been on the minds of pretty much most boxing fans ever since you became a pro. Who gave you the nickname Boo Boo Brother, and why?
You know, there's many stories. You know, they said that you know, since I was young and I was the, you know, I was the shit, and they didn't want to use the word, they didn't want to call me that, so they called me Boo Boo. But you know, they said, you know, I used to you know, get a lot of boo boos running in the house, Boo Boo, and now, you know, so either way, you know, it works for me.
So it's not because of Yogi Bear. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I mean, there was no Yogi. It was a cool, too smooth Boo Boo. That's funny.
I love it, man. You know, what's amazing is, Demetrius, you seem to be the total package, brother. We've seen you take the lead proficiently. We've seen you box and use that jab. I mean, you know, proficiently. You seem to be a jack of all trades and a chameleon in the ring. You know, how do you think Vanyus Martirosyan is going to approach you? If you had to guess, how do you think he's going to come out swinging, man? Do you think he's going to make you take the lead, or is he going to try to be the aggressor against Demetrius Boo Boo Andre?
You know, I really don't have an answer for that, because decide or try to do, I'm gonna have an answer for that. So therefore, whatever comes out with me, I'm ready to take it on. And if he wants to sit there and try to bounce around like he always does in all his fights, walk his ass down. And if he tries to box me, I'm gonna walk his ass down. And if he tries to walk me down, I'm gonna walk his ass down. But I'm gonna just pretty much do what I've been doing. You know, I've been fighting all over the world, so I know how to adjust. I've seen all types of styles, and I've seen everything he has to offer, and I don't think he's seen anything that I have to offer.
Wow, that is amazing, because yeah, he's in the same boat you are, brother, where he's had to sit by and patiently wait. I mean, his last outing was against Arislandi Lada. I mean, that was a while back. And he's had to wait patiently for this opportunity. You know, what were your thoughts? And did you see his last outing against Arislandi Lada? And what was your impression of Vanyus when you saw that fight?
I looked at it like a, you know, an average fighter. You know, hit and be hit, pretty much. You know, there's nothing special that I see that he does. You know, I don't know what type of power or really how fast he is, but none of that is my concern. Then do my job and execute the game plan. I don't see no pop.
Well, you know, you're fighting in a packed division, but it seems to be monopolized by Golden Boy Promotions. And obviously Artie has filled in on that, and he's aware of this. You know, do you feel that if you do win the title, I should say when you win the title on November 9th, do you feel that you're going to become a very avoided champion in the packed 154-pound weight division?
I mean, it's very possible, because, you know, a lot of them guys that's already known or working their way up, that are already in the amateurs and beat already. So, you know, I'm just getting bigger, stronger, faster, and better. And it seems like, you know, they're not doing that. And so, you know, they might want to avoid me. But at the same time, I'm going to have a belt. You know, hopefully, you know, the income, generate a lot of income, and the fans just keep on supporting, and I keep packing houses. I mean, there's not going to be no fight.
Wow, that's very interesting. So you say that there's not going to be any way that they're going to be able to avoid you with the
main interest that
you're going to generate from this performance and the money that's going to be at the end of fighting a beast like Demetrius Andrade. You feel that there's no way the big fighters, the big-name fighters at 154 are going to be able to avoid you forever?
Especially if they don't want to help. That's, you know, I mean, they can't run too. They've been running for a while now, so I mean, it's not too much longer they can run for. I'm climbing the top on top.
Wow. You know what's amazing, Demetrius, and I'm sorry, can you hear me a little bit? Sounds like you're breaking up. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Okay, very good. Now, in your last outing, we saw Virgil Hunter in your corner. You did a tremendous job. But are you back training with your dad, and what was that all about? I mean, who's going to be in your corner? Who's going to be training you? Who's training you currently in the gym? And is this something that's going to be a regular staple in your camp?
Yeah, you know, the story behind that was, you know, when I was supposed to play Zubek, you know, I had my dad back in my corner. You know, going in that Freddie Hernandez fight with Virgil Hunter, you know, I was basically, you know, we didn't have really too much time to really like work with each other, but I was just going in there basically what I learned from my dad and the skills that I know and the IQ that I have. But, you know, when I finally got the call that I was going to fight for WBO and they were talking about it was going to be within the next month or two, you know, I wanted to have, you know, my dad, the person that's been there all my life through thick and thin, through the boxing, through, you know, sickness and take care of me and somebody that's traveled the world with me and spent all this money. And my dreams and goal was always to end up having the title shot with my dad. And so, you know, I had to make the best decision. And in that Freddie Hernandez fight, I thought I could have done a lot better if my dad was with me, you know. So things are much better with me. I feel like everything is coming together, and I think I'm back where I need to be.
That is great to hear, man. So, you know, what has, you know, you and your dad, obviously you've got a great relationship. You're very close. What is it going to mean for you? What is it going to mean to you when you hoist up that championship belt and your dad's going to be right there by you? What is that going to be? What is that going to be like for you on November 9th?
I mean, you know, I really can't explain the feeling until, you know, it happens. But I know it's going to be great. It's going to be a dream come true. You know, something that we've been both working for. And he can say that from start to finish, well, I mean, let me not say finish, but from scratch, from a young pup that he done breeded and built and put all his time and effort in, that he made a world champion.
Wow. Boy, that's going to be something special. And we look forward to it happening on November 9th. It's going to take place, guys, on the biggest stage of boxing, HBO in Corpus Christi, Texas. Demetrius, thank you so much for this time. And, you know, I can just tell that, man, that is going to be something special for you, and it's going to mean everything for you at this point in your career. We want to give you your parting shots for all of your fans who have been waiting for this moment. It's going to come on November 9th. Your final words to all of your fans, and how can they actually reach you and follow your career?
Yeah, you know, like everybody else, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Boo Boo Boxing, booboboxing.com. You follow all my stuff. We're actually working on some, Road to the Championship, doing our own little, like, 24/7 episodes. You can see that on Facebook, Twitter. Just want to thank everybody for supporting me, people that are looking out for me, that want to see me, my fans, and, also the people that don't know nothing about me and that people keep mentioning, I want to steal their hearts as well, too, and just let them know that, you know, you want the next American star. Well, here I am, and I'm going to showcase and show the world what they've been waiting for. Come November 9th.
Demetrius. Thank you so much for being on the air, sir, and being on this episode of the Pugilist Corner, brother. You're a class act, man, and we wish you nothing but the best of luck on November 9th, when you face Vanya Smart-Erosian on HBO. Thank you so much for being on this episode, sir.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for having me, and God bless all of you. And, I can't wait to get back on the show when I get that strap around my waist.
Oh, absolutely, brother. We love to feature you once again. When you take care of business, November 9th, outstanding. Good luck, my friend, and God bless you, brother.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
Well, guys, that was Demetrius Boubou-Andrade. Definitely worth the wait. He is one of the just best ambassadors of the sport, one of the best young fighters in all of boxing. At the age of 25, he seems to be on the cusp of greatness. We'll see if he can actually bring home the gold on November 9th when he faces, wow, a huge step up in class and definitely his most formidable test to date, former Olympian Mr. Vanyas Martirosyan. But JK, it's about that time, brother. Take us home and roll the music, my friend.
Yes, sir. We'd like to thank everyone for listening to this extended version of the Pugilist Corner. We'd like to thank all our guests tonight, Mr. Hole Diaz, Iceman Scully, Mr. Brian Jennings, Roman Morales, and Alejandro Luna, and especially Mr. Andrade. Thank you, everyone, and we will see you next week on the Pugilist Corner. Have a great night.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.